Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, NFL columnist for BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Yo.
So, Brian.
Yes.
It is a slow period of time in the National Football League.
It is.
Free agency has ground almost to a complete halt. We are over a month, just over a month away from the 2015 NFL draft kicking off, which means we have a lot of time
to talk about draft prospects. Sure.
So, but you know what? There is a major sporting event happening this weekend.
A sporting entertainment event.
A sports entertainment event, if you will. Though, of course, these guys are all superb athletes. Of course, we're talking about WrestleMania 31 coming at you live on Sunday night. A four-hour extravaganza live from Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. Of course, you can purchase said WrestleMania pay-per-view, or you can sign up for the WWE Network at only $9.99 a month with no commitment and just spend $10 to watch the best sports entertainment event of the year.
Disclaimer, all opinions expressed on the podcast this evening are our own and do not reflect those of WWE.
We're also not being sponsored here. We're just telling you, you know, if you're interested in WrestleMania, it's not going to cost you a lot of money this year. So with that in mind, we have brought on our all-pro, all-star, Hall of Fame F-Ball NFL podcast guest, Rumford Johnny.
Resident fantasy football expert.
Our resident fantasy football expert and pro wrestling historian, Rumford Johnny, will be joining us this evening. We are going to go match by match through the WrestleMania card, make our predictions, talk about the wrestlers involved in the matches, talk about the historical contexts of a lot of these matches, you know, as it relates to old storylines and things it reminds us of. A lot of nostalgia as well. So we're taking a different approach to the podcast this week. We're making it a pro wrestling podcast.
Yeah, if you're not into wrestling at all, you probably just should tune in next week.
Yeah, this is not your week. We'll be back on the NFL and getting ready for the draft and all of that stuff again coming back next week. But this week, we are going to preview WrestleMania 31 with Rumford Johnny. And we are going to do that right after the break. So stay tuned and get pumped up for one of the greatest sports / entertainment spectacles of the year.
Oh yeah,
you know it rivals that of the Super Bowl.
Or should I say, oh yeah? No.
We'll be back after this break with Rumford Johnny to talk about WrestleMania 31. So stay tuned. We are the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Our guest this week should be familiar to any regular listener here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Of course, it is the one, the only Rumford Johnny, co-host of the Rummy and Ray podcast with Ray Summerlin of RotoWorld, contributor at BoJackson.com, formerly of Two Mugs Fantasy Football, and a regular around these parts. So welcome, Johnny.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back. The studio again, the crushed velvet chaise lounge that I love to like recline on and let somebody paint me like one of the French girls in, you know, the Titanic movie. And, yeah, it's nice. It's nice to be back with you guys and to talk all things sports. And tonight we get to talk about WrestleMania.
Yes, right? It's WrestleMania nice. Week. Sunday night, WrestleMania 31, Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. So that's a little football tie-in, the cursed new stadium where the 49ers are forced to play.
Would it have been nice, though, really? Let's be honest. Would it have been nice if Jim Harbaugh was still there in his, like, Walmart, like, chinos, like, playing the heel in the middle of the ring and just kind of working up the crowd? But, you know.
Hey, as much as he's been making appearances, I wouldn't cross that out.
He showed up,
I know,
everywhere.
I mean, that would have been fun. But, you know, of course, that's not good. Tom Sula just doesn't do it. You know, he's more like an old 80s jobber, you know, with the mustache. And
yep.
He doesn't really fit the mold too much.
So So this is going to be, you know, a pretty interesting WrestleMania. We've got a couple of major matches at the top of the card, but we got to start. Let's start talking about WrestleMania at the bottom of the card. We'll start with the fatal four-way tag team matchup for the WWE Tag Team Championship. We got our champions Tyson Kidd and Cesaro going up against the New Day, the Los Matadores, and the Usos. In my opinion, what's interesting to me is seeing Los Matadores being inserted into this feud the past couple of weeks. Like, all of a sudden, WWE is like, okay, the guys with the tiny bull.
Throw the bull in.
Let's throw them in. Let's give them a WrestleMania moment.
Well, that's why they're at the bottom of the car.
Yeah, well, clearly.
It's clearly like the, the American Horror Story freak show. Part of the card, you know, with all kinds of weirdos and stuff like that, which is fine. By the way, Cesaro, to me, when I first started watching him in the WWE, I thought Stanley Tucci really has been working out lately. He looks amazing. He looks amazing. But no, really, come on. This is the card that kind of gets your feet wet. A little bit, you know, it gets the crowd a little worked up. You know, they get to go to the bathroom a little bit.
Flying,
you know,
spots and stuff to maybe.
You know,
like,
they get to do their thing. You know, what I'm saying?
It's like stretching.
You need to warm up before.
Right, if you're gonna watch WrestleMania, you need to, you need to get warmed up first, and so, you know, you got to stretch out with this weird tagness that we've seen six iterations of already. So
yeah, I mean, because you have the New Day. Which is just so unfortunate from the beginning. I mean, it's obvious what the WWE is doing here, and it doesn't help matters at all that they have been dressed in powder blue, which is apparently Vince McMahon's most loathed color. So we can kind of see where they're going with the New Day, and that these guys aren't going to be going pretty far together. And then, of course, you've got a joke tag team, a novelty tag team in Los Matadores. So you look at the incumbent champions Kidd and Cesaro, and the Usos is basically the only true contenders here to walk away with these belts. I'm liking what's
going
on.
It's a way to dress up that tag match,
I
basically.
Like what's going on with Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, though. You know, you've got Tyson Kidd with his cat fact ring gear. You've got Cesaro, who, you know, I knew back in the day as Claudio Castagnoli in Ring of Honor. I've seen him wrestle in tiny buildings in the past. And it was one of the strongest, most natural athletes in the WWE. But Vince is not really convinced because he knows too many languages and his nipples aren't the right size. I'm just telling the truth here.
Speak it.
I think they're a very entertaining tag team. You know, I think that they've kind of threw these two guys together. They didn't really know what to do with them, and they've really ran with it in terms of having some charisma. I would hope that they retain only because it's just we've seen the Usos be on top before. We've seen them be tag team champions before. We know what the Usos are. They're the very kid friendly tag team in the WWE, and I think there's only so much that, you know, jumping can do for them, you know, jumping around and hitting super kicks.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much it. That's what the kids want, and that's what Vince wants to give them is what the kids want.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you. I think they probably again, are there literally like Vegas lines for this stuff? Can you like?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Really?
Break it down. The Masked Man breaks it down on Grantland today. Yep. Actually, broke it down. Yeah.
I don't think they do it every week. Like lines every week for Raw or anything like that. But I think for
WrestleMania,
at least WrestleMania, if not some of the other bigger ones.
Yeah, it's even money for the main event.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a good bet, like you were saying. I mean, probably a good bet that Kidd and Cesaro is probably the smart money. I mean, just because it's a little outside of the box. Like you said, it's the kid-friendly, you know, the Usos are the kid-friendly option, but the, you know, maybe they go outside the box a little bit. Maybe they make it a little interesting, and maybe that's where you want to put your money. Who knows? You know what I'm saying?
There's always the rematch on Raw the next night. Anyways,
I know the very next day. Yeah.
The next match on the card here. We've got nine matches over 4 hours. Next up, we've got the Bella twins, Nikki and Brie, taking on AJ Lee and Paige in a tag team match. They commentated for the fact that there's going to be no belts changing hands here by having a title match on Raw on Monday. You know, the AJ and Paige thing, I mean, it's been something they've kind of been putting together. It's good, kind of the storyline's kind of gone in and out over the past few months. But basically, you've got the frenemies angle with them.
Yeah, it's never made friends, and yet best frenemies. It's never made any sense, though.
Right, and then you've got the Bella twins, and I don't know. I mean,
but I've seen a little bit of it. I think they're ultimately the better wrestlers, in my opinion.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah.
But it's still. You know,
right. I don't know. I guess, I mean, you know, and in wrestling, any angle can kind of emerge out of nowhere, but because you never know, really. But yeah, I don't know. I would prefer that the better wrestlers win, in my opinion, because I mean, I think it's the angle for the Bella twins is just kind of like, you know what I mean? They look alike. Wow, they're twins. It's amazing. they're just kind of boring to me. You know what I mean? They're just like the two girls at like a nightclub that like, you know, ignore half the guys in the club and, you know, they leave home and they go away together and stuff. That's just kind of what they embody to me when I see them. It's just kind of boring. At least AJ and Paige are a little bit more fun to watch, I think. So, I don't know. We'll see.
In ring, yeah, I agree. That's
in ring, AJ,
that's a great way to sum it up.
Definitely are better to watch in the ring. I think the Bellas end up winning this match. You know, you've got the Total Divas connection there because both the Bella twins and Paige are on Total Divas now. But you know, you got Brie Bella married to Daniel Bryan. You've got Nikki Bella dating John Cena.
Yeah.
You know, they're the heels in this situation. They're probably going to do – and you know, AJ and Paige have kind of a tenuous sort of friendship or alliance. So
which,
I think that all
which
of those
was
things,
exacerbated last week
sure.
in, like, some supposed
so
accidental whatever. Yeah, exactly.
So I think the Bellas get the win.
You could, they're building the rift between the two, so.
Sure.
I know. It's always like, you know, you see a little bit of it, and then – then there's a steel chair in the back of the head.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some sort of weird interference or someone gets distracted and then it's a roll-up.
There's a hair pull, you know, at the last second and what's going on? You know, you're going for the cover and that's it. And then there's...
Yeah, or AJ, you know, Paige is holding back one of the Bella twins so AJ can kick her and then the Bella twin moves out of the way so AJ kicks Paige and then... But then there's chaos amongst team members, and then
I think
just...
you've choreographed it perfectly.
I think you just described like six of the last nine Raws, but anyway.
Let's move on to the match that's probably going to steal the show at WrestleMania. It's going to be the Intercontinental Championship ladder match featuring Dolph Ziggler, Daniel Bryan, Dean Ambrose, Ooh. Wade Barrett, R-Truth, Stardust, and Luke Harper.
That should be a fun one.
That's way
this
too many
is going
goddamn
to be,
people.
This is going to be people putting their bodies on the line to entertain a crowd and steal a show at WrestleMania.
Yeah, there's a lot of good workers in this.
This is going to be a lot of good work going on here. There's going to be a lot of strange moments. Of course, you've got R-Truth, afraid of heights, in a ladder match. You've got Dolph Ziggler, not afraid of anything, in a ladder match. Dean Ambrose, too stupid and crazy to be afraid of things. Daniel Bryan coming off of neck and shoulder surgeries last year. Wade Barrett, who just wants to get his belt back and have people stop stealing it from him. And, of course, Stardust and Luke Harper, because why not? Because
they're crazy.
Because they're crazy, and why not? Yep. Got to have something for them to do.
So let me ask you, do you have the line in front of you for this one or no?
No, I don't, but I can
okay.
I can quickly pull that up, I think, as long as
my phone I'm going to say my smart money is going to be on Luke Harper. I don't know why. I don't know. I have no reason for that. I just want to see that guy with the disgusting tank top come to the ring with a belt around his waist. You know, just the gross, like, sweaty guy with the beard. Just, you know, it makes sense to me. I don't know why. It just makes sense.
You just want him to pass the belt on eventually and have it be kind of gross at that point?
A little bit greasy.
It'll be greasy. It'll be,
you got to wipe it off.
It'll be like a Lombardi, you know, like with Mike Tomlin, you know, on that America's Game where he's talking about how gross it is. Like that, you know, be all, like, greasy and smelly and, you know, not too hygienic. Yeah, totally.
Well, I'd like
to... Harper's at 33-1 odds, by the way.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
he's got the worst odds of them all, in
fact. Lot of value there.
There you go. There you go.
A lot of value there.
There's the value. Exactly. I mean, what do you got to lose? I mean, you got nothing. You know, it's the sky's the limit there. I mean, that's the long shot. You know what I mean?
See, you know, not to tip my hand on predictions I'm going to be making later in the night, but I think that Daniel Bryan ends up winning this Intercontinental Tournament, this ladder match, if you will, not tournament, mainly because I think that this WrestleMania is going to see a shift to importance being placed on the U.S. and Intercontinental titles because of the nature of how they're handling the current world heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar, where Vince McMahon has said, you know, we don't need the champion there every week. We don't need Brock Lesnar there every week because he's a special attraction. When Brock shows up, you know, it's a momentous occasion. There's a reason for him to be there. He doesn't have to defend the belt all the time because there adds more prestige to the championship the less times you see the champion in a month or in a couple of months. So I think by giving these lower belts, like the U.S. title and the Intercontinental Championship, to higher-profile wrestlers like Daniel Bryan, then they can give meaning to these titles that have been seemingly meaningless for years, and then at least have some title action and champions on TV on a weekly basis who people care about without having to have the world champion there.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess that's the one way to look at it. I mean, I don't know. I think that... I don't know. I personally, I think the whole thing about having sort of the passive champion, you know, almost like the deadbeat dad champion.
Sure.
You know, like the dad that shows up with $5 on your birthday, you know, and like, hey, you know, I'm going to run to the store for some cigarettes and some milk and I'll be right back. And then, you know, you see him like 6 months later and I'm going to be at this pay-per-view, you know, and then, like, the lights fall in the arena, you know, and then you see, like, you know, that spotlight, and I don't know. I don't really dig that. I think that there's a place for it, but I think that, you know, with The Rock and Brock Lesnar and guys like that are marquee guys, I think that there's something to be said for, you know, having a champion that, like, you know, defends. I mean, those days are kind of over, but it just seems like it shouldn't be over.
I think it works with Brock, though, because
I have my opinions about that, but go ahead, man.
Just because Brock is just this, you know, freak of nature.
He's
so,
a singular talent, a singular type of guy. There's no one who compares.
He's just too huge and too freakish, and they've built him pretty well since he's come back, and. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that he was the only one to take out Undertaker, unless,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we'll talk about that match later, I guess. But, the way he crushed Cena last year.
Cena.
SummerSlam
one of
whatever.
The most satisfying things I've seen in the WWE ring in years.
The suplex party that was. yeah, I mean, they've kind of built him to be this monster type. And I do like I kind of, you know, there's something to, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, that kind of thing. He goes away and you want more. He's not around every time. So then when he does come around,
it carries more weight.
Yeah, you hear that entrance.
It's monster.
You hear that music kick in, and then like, and it makes it extra. Extra exciting for the crowd, I think.
I guess. I mean, I look, and this might be blasphemy, but I just never really bought into the whole Brock Lesnar thing. He's a really incredible athlete. I know. I follow the whole background with amateur wrestling and everything. He really is a freak. He really is an unbelievable athlete. But and the MMA, you know, short stint. I mean, he did have some immediate kind of success, and then it kind of faded after that. But
well, it turns out you can knock him out, and then he got diverticulitis.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. Amazing how that happens.
I think you're just sore because you got that Vikings jersey with his name on it.
Probably, yeah.
But if you do, I'll take it off your hands.
I'll take that off your hands. Anybody got a Brock Lesnar Vikings jersey from training camp? I want that.
Yeah, I doubt that. But they probably have it, like, in the pro shop now. You probably buy it. No, I just never really, like, look, and then maybe I'm biased because I think that wrestlers really, for me, it's, we talked about this before we started taping, that I think it's really about the wrestling. It's really about, you know, your persona and not just the mystique. I think he's more about mystique than anything else.
Yeah.
I don't think he's really about personality. Cause I mean, there really isn't any for Brock Lesnar.
But it
I mean,
is
he's
great
not...
when he chuckles a little stuff. Paul says and stuff. That's great when he breaks out his little chuckles.
They've made it work with Paul Heyman. That's the thing.
Well, that's
I know what you're getting at here. You're going towards the talkers here, and he's not a talker.
Right.
But he's a way around it. You know.
This will kind of lead us to, like, later on. We have I know we have a topic that we really want to discuss later on, but I think that that's kind of my thing about certain wrestlers that don't have, you know, quote unquote, a personality that you can cultivate and become, you know, and elevate. Because look, let's go way, way back. Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, was really a guy they didn't want talking at all.
No.
That way back when. You guys know.
No, back in
guys,
WCW when he was Stunning Steve.
Yeah, even before even before that, you know, he was one of the part of the Hollywood Blondes and all that stuff. You know, his hair was starting to fall out. But he had long blonde hair, and you know, and it was all about his just wrestling, and they didn't really had nothing to do with his personality.
No, if anybody was going to talk, it was going to be Brian Pillman, obviously, between those two.
Right, and then eventually, you know, he knew he could be this guy, he could be this personality, and when they allowed him to finally be that guy, and that's who he was all the whole time.
But Paul Heyman was able to draw that out of him, and he was allowed to test those limits because he left WCW, did not want, you know, and it was before he went to WWF and was in ECW, and he really got to cultivate that personality, and that's what drew the WWE back in on him.
But now, you're now again, Paul is Brock's personality in lieu of him not really having a great personality.
Sure.
And that's the difference, and that's why I tend to not like really buy into to wrestlers like that, because I think that, you know, it's about like the whole thing, man. It's about the whole package. It's about, you know, the wrestling. It's about the personality. It's about buying into the storyline and how you carry that storyline, and you know how far.
I'll give you one rebuttal.
Okay.
And It's a guy who unquestionable personality, but did not use a microphone.
The Undertaker.
The Undertaker, and that's kind of what I'm. That's how I see him parallel because it's this.
But the Undertaker had Paul Bearer.
Right. So, but that's and Paul did most. Paul Bearer did most of the talking for him back then, and
The
Undertaker was this mystique that came out. He came out and didn't have to say anything, you know what I mean? And
I
think
you,
that
I get you.
They've been smart in building Brock kind of a similar manner. Although he does talk every now and then, that kind of ruins it.
It does.
No, it doesn't. He talks about bodily fluids dripping down people's legs.
I'm sorry. It did when he first came back. He has gotten so much better at like
being
just
scary.
Yeah, because he just says, and he's got kind of like this Tyson-esque like high voice, and then he'll just say something about like ripping someone's limbs off, and you're just like, whoa, what?
Yeah, no, but I get what you're saying. Like from the beginning, look, and again, I like I told you guys too at the outset. I mean, I did watch a lot of wrestling when I was younger and stuff, and I do kind of know the lineage of some of these wrestlers who develop, and they've gone through, you know, again. A lot of big wrestlers, too. We're talking about Brock Lesnar. We're talking about The Undertaker, you know, Mark Calloway. I mean,
Mean Mark Calloway.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, he was, you know, this guy that, again, freakish, huge athlete that could, like, you know, basically catwalk the top rope. And, I mean, all this stuff that he was able to do, and we knew that he was, you know, an incredible athlete. But, you know, it was this sort of the antithesis of the, you know, the wrestler of that time period. He wasn't, He wasn't tan. He wasn't cut up. He wasn't all these different things. He didn't have blonde hair. You know, he was pale. You know, he had a different look. And, you know, they did the right thing. They took this guy that they knew was a great athlete, and they turned him into the Undertaker. They just said, look, he looks dead, this guy. He's pale and all. And they found that right niche for him. He didn't have to say anything, but that's the whole thing. He could say something. We know he has a personality. He was a quiet guy. But they found the right thing for him
right. That
just stuck, and it was just, like, iconic. And whereas Brock is just Brock Lesnar, and he's just this big, you know, freak and, like, you
yeah,
know,
he's just the beast.
Machine.
He's the beast.
Machine. And it's kind of like, you know, there's no difference to me, you know, than him and kind of Batista in a way, you know, like it's the same kind of one trick pony. There's just no real character around it. It's just like, okay, he's the big nasty guy that beats everybody up and he's the freak and, you know, that's it. And there's no real charm to it for me.
Sure.
It's sort of kind of a blank slate, you know?
Sure. I mean, I can get that. I could see why, you know, he could get some, like, negative Batista comparisons.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
Moving on to another match here, the second annual Andre the Giant Invitational Battle Royal.
Oh, boy.
19 superstars.
Uh-oh.
A.K.A. all of the storylines the WWE needs to resolve in one night but can't put together enough matches to do that.
A.K.A. everybody else in the back.
Yes, everybody else in the back. We've got Kane, we've got The Big Show, we've got The Miz, we've got Mark Henry, the return of Sheamus. He's been working some house shows, but he'll be back actually on pay-per-view. Heath Slater, Jack Swagger, Sin Cara, among the people involved. I personally am very excited. I would like Curtis Axel to have his Axelmania moment since he never actually got eliminated at the Royal Rumble to finally have his day winning a Battle Royal and let Axelmania run wild over all of the nation and the universe. But I
wouldn't mind that just because, like, it would be nice to see him get a little bit of a push just because he hasn't had been able to make anything work at all.
No, he's actually, like, kind of over right now for this dumb little game.
Right, right.
But personally, I see it as it's either going to be Sheamus, considering it's Sheamus's big return, potentially The Big Show, because they keep pumping up how, you know, the Andre the Giant and he's a giant stuff. They've been really pumping that up this year. Or in my personal sleeper, even though he's not the betting line sleeper by any means, Mizdow.
Yeah. Yeah,
Mizdow, I think, would be a fine champion for the or trophy winner for the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, especially if, you know, it causes the Miz, of course, to have a giant temper tantrum.
That's going to happen regardless.
Yeah, he's going to break his trophy.
They're going to resolve
if he
that
wins
whole.
It,
yeah,
Miz is going to break that trophy. We know it's coming. That trophy's getting broken, no matter who wins it. Bottom line.
Yeah, that's probably the way. I mean, like you said, it's either that or Sheamus. I still think that they really kind of they still want to make a push for him. I think they realize that also that he's sort of an international guy that is this after WrestleMania where they do like the European tour too?
Yeah, they do the European tour generally like a couple of weeks after WrestleMania. Yeah.
Right, so, you know, that helps too. So if he wins something and, you know, it's like...
He can carry a stupid trophy around Ireland in a couple
of years. Yeah, sure, they love to push Sheamus.
I mean, exactly. I mean, if they're going to be doing the international stuff, I mean, that kind of, like, is a good push for them and a good, you know, to get them over for, you know, for a couple of weeks, I think, at least.
It'd be a good way to get
them
back
smaller.
In. Yeah, since he's been out for so long, that would be a nice way to get him back in.
If they
sure.
brought him back also and made him a heel, that would be even better too, because Sheamus has never done it for me as a face. He acts like a jerk, and I know that's like the WWE's thing, like, oh, you're a face, you're a sarcastic jerk who, like, calls women names.
Since Stone Cold, LOL. that's been the thing. Yeah.
And but like Sheamus, like it never
since The Rock mainly.
Yeah, that's definitely a Rock
the,
thing.
The Rock thing is when you're talking
and,
about.
And they try to do that. They've been doing that for so long with Sheamus, and it's just not come off well. I don't like the sarcasm, snarky, wink, wink, jokey crap that they do with a lot of their faces to begin with. But with Sheamus, it just never comes off. It always feels like a heel move. even though the crowd, you know,
I would like Sheamus a lot better if he were heel. That'd be it would just work well with who he how he works.
Certain wrestlers are just like, you know, when they certain things never work when they force like a face turn. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've always thought that was odd. Like, I remember way back, like if you guys remember, like the Big Boss Man.
Yeah.
When they tried to turn him into a face, it was like, it was just so dumb. It was like,
yeah,
no, he's the heel. He's the bad prison guard.
He's a bad. Like, he's like a bad cop, dude. He's not like exactly your friend, the cop. Like,
you know, and it was like, I remember that, and they like did that too with like Psycho Sid.
Uh-huh.
You know, way back. I'm going way back in the time machine with you guys,
Sid
by the
Vicious.
Way.
Like, Sid Vicious is never a face.
He's nuts.
Sid, like, yeah, and they pulled that Sid Justice stuff with him. What is that?
That wasn't – nobody bought that because, I mean, the guy – it was funny because I remember like listening to somebody – I don't know if it was like Kevin Nash or somebody like said he was he was just like – he was like very stiff too. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of guys would get hurt, you know, facing Sid because he was just like big and you know, really strong. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it went over the line a little bit, you know, with finishing moves and stuff. So guys would get hurt and they get their backs all screwed up. And, you know, it's just like those kind of guys don't like, you know, they have a shelf life, you know, in an organization. And he's one of those guys that like you just bring in because he's, you know, wherever it went, WCW, whatever, because he's just such a big, huge guy and powerful and, you know, dominant and. Again, that same line that I was talking about earlier, where it's just really hard to make him anything more than what he is.
Well, Sid can't talk. Sid.
Oh no, and not that was
that's the half a brain guy, right?
Yeah.
If I'm twice the man as you with half the brains.
It was weird. I remember like there's a good YouTube video too. It's like it was from like Survivor Series or something, and and they try. It was just. It was like Skinner. It was a Skinner Akbar, and the Iron Sheik, and Sergeant Slaughter, and they were like in some random like you know military esque kind of thing. Like you know they were all wearing berets. You know it was like probably some kind of like
Gulf War thing.
Yes, exactly. Like they were trying to parlay that into something. And
sounds
they
about
wanted
right.
him to be part of their group, and he's like, "I'm not part of your core." And it was just like, it was insane. You know, like within 2 minutes, he's sweating. Like, you know, Sid is like dripping sweat.
Yeah.
And it's just the greatest thing. But it's, you know, that's who he is. He's just that one trick pony. But
it's just, that's just funny how much it's changed in that time, the 20 years or so. It's just that, like, if he were around today, they wouldn't let him talk. You know what I mean? It's like back then, it was just like, well, let's
give him a microphone.
Dude, give him a microphone. Let him see if he can work it out.
Yeah,
but it's true. Like back then, they didn't care. I mean, they pretty much give. And there were some bad, like big men. You know, I mean, like on the microphone. You know, like there's so very few that were. Andre the Giant's the worst of all time. I mean, because he couldn't speak.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was, you know, he had sort of a speech issue because of, you know, his you know, giantism, if you will.
And he
was French, you know, and so it always sounded funny, but, and Big John Studd was terrible and all these other guys. And I think Bruiser Brody was probably the only good big man that was good on the microphone, but, I'm going way, way back, but, I mean,
rest
so...
in peace, man. Bruiser Brody was... It, man. He was it.
And that was another guy, too, by the way. Like, I always hear stories about him. He was one of the few guys, because he was so big and nasty. And, of course, the way he died was awful and everything, but...
Carlos Colon.
Yeah. But the thing is that with him was that, you know, he was one of the few guys that, like, didn't, like, cave to the pressure of bad promotions. Like, that just said, you know, if you don't pay me this... then I'm not going to show up. And he'd be like the guy on the top of the card. And, you know, they'd pay him. You know, and other guys would get screwed. And Brody didn't care. He just, like, said, I'll hold up the whole goddamn show if you don't pay me. And he did that. but he forced these promoters to be honest, you know, with a lot of promotions. And that was kind of, you know, of course it was very, very caveman-like. But he could because he was, you know.
He's a Brody and he's the draw. He's... pretty tough dude.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so it was good stories. I love hearing stories about him and stuff. He's great.
Yeah, I will add this about Sid. Sid is, without question, the first pro wrestler to ever scare me as a kid. I remember when he was in the Four Horsemen, and the Four Horsemen were really gunning after Sting, and Sid was just going nuts at, like, Halloween Havoc and stuff, and just powerbombing people onto stretchers. And I was just like, this guy has the most devastating powerbomb in the entire world. He looks crazy in the face, like he's actually going to murder people. And I was like 8 years old, and I'm just like, Sid is the scariest. And like, this is at a time where Abdullah the Butcher was still around, and I was watching him, and I'm like, no, Sid was scarier to me than Abdullah the Butcher.
Yeah, he came at the right time. Like, he just, like, you know, he did just enough to, like, really, you know, go from one federation to the next and just and parlay that kind of, like, big monster, you know, like that draw. So, yeah, he had his time. So, but
he's a heck of a softball player, too.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah, he's like a semi-pro or something like that softball player. In Florida. He's just nuts.
He's a monster, man.
He's
I
a
can
monster.
Imagine it. He probably like cranks, he goes yard every like
right.
pitch, you know.
Moving on now to the next bout here at WrestleMania. We've got John Cena fighting for America, throwback style, against the Bulgarian brute, but also the Russian monster now at this point. Rusev.
I love the bringing Russia back, because, I mean,
this is a U.S. versus Russia thing, too. Like, Cena's like, this is for America.
Well, you know what? What's old is new again, you know, because
sure.
You go back, again, we talked about this earlier, but, you know, with, like, the whole Iron Sheik and, you know, Nikolai Volkov and all during that time period where we had our quote unquote enemies, you know, that they were so defined. And now it's kind of like, you know, Vladimir Putin's like a sinister, like, you know, mobster, you know, like, you know, leader. And it kind of helps regenerate this whole, you know, let's bring this guy in there that I he's probably like Middle Eastern, for Christ's sakes. Who the hell knows what
he
is?
He's Bulgarian.
Is he really?
Okay. Yeah, he's got a, this is the most ridiculous part of this whole thing to me, is I liked him when I first... I've liked Rusev since I first saw him. I mean, he's amazing to me.
Yeah.
And he just rambles in another language, and he's scary, and he yells, and beats on his... He's fantastic. But he was the Bulgarian brute when he first came out, and he was on NXT. Well, I'm sure he was other places, too, but when I first saw him, he was on NXT.
Yeah, it's the Bulgarian
brute.
The
Bulgarian brute. And then soon
they put him in
WWE, and it was like, well, that's close, and let's just, you know, let's make him Russian.
Yeah, let's make
and Lada's then we can do this whole
gonna be Russian.
Right. So we'll
listen.
Do this whole Russia USA, you know, beef again. Rocky IV. Let's play it out like for the 80,000th time.
I know, it's the best.
But it's easy for people to pick up on. Obviously, it's because it's hard to like. It's easy to.
It's
for,
a standard wrestling trope, hey, to America versus U.S.
Exactly. It's
Putin.
Easy for the majority of wrestling fans to get behind him as a heel as a Russian than him as a heel as a Bulgarian, because they don't know what Bulgaria is.
I know, and it's the beauty of wrestling is that if you kind of look a little like something, Vince McMahon will make you that guy.
Just call it that.
Oh, the Los Matadores are two Puerto Rican wrestlers.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, look, hey, hello, Chief J. Strongbow was Italian.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like, and it's just the hilarious part. It's like half of these wrestlers were never like of this origin, but it was how you presented it. If you got over, I mean, the guy, you know, the guy that played, let me help me out here. The Russian bear, in NWA. God, help me out here.
Ivan Koloff,
but what was his nephew, quote unquote, was
Nikolai Volkov?
No, you had it. It was damn it. I mean, he was totally, like, not even close to being Russian.
No, he wasn't Russian. I know who you're talking about.
I can't remember his name, and it's killing me right now. And someone who listens to this is going to, like, call me on Twitter, I bet. But anyway. And
that's
he
fine.
Was
they're
nothing.
Welcome to.
And he was he had no semblance. It was like the worst Russian, like, pretend accent. But it was just like, it was, you know, he did it well enough and consistently enough that there were idiots that watched it who thought he was really Russian. And that's just like, that's the beauty of it. If you buy into it, you buy into the whole thing, then that's great. You know, that's
Vladimir Petrov.
What?
Vladimir Petrov was introduced as a with Ivan Koloff. I don't know. I'm trying to find this.
Nikita Koloff.
Nikita Koloff. There we go.
Yes.
There we go.
And the Russian Nightmare. That was his name.
Yeah, he wasn't Russian.
And I know, not even close.
He was supposed to be Lithuanian after a while, right? He was billed as Lithuanian.
But he wrestled with the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. So they
were
like,
yes, he did.
They were the quote unquote superpowers.
Yes. Yes.
The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, Nikita Koloff, superpowers. Baby.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah,
because
he turned face, and then he was a nice Lithuanian and not an evil Russian.
Right.
And he had that like gravelly like Dusty Rhodes, you know. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Dude, come on, bro. You know. But yeah, it was amazing. But that was a time like people in wrestling, you could do something that wasn't actually happening in the world. Like you could bring Russia and America together, you know, and be one and be and work together in harmony, which is great, man. That's the whole theater of wrestling. You know, it's the theater of the mind. It's like whatever you want it to be, we'll make it that way for you. You know, and that's the whole fun of wrestling, I think.
What I'm excited about is that Cena is actually in a secondary title scenario right now because, like I was saying earlier with the Intercontinental thing with Daniel Bryan, you know, my prediction that Daniel Bryan wins the Intercontinental belt is that if you have Cena beating Rusev for the U.S. title, then you have these two, you know,
previous
now kind of meaningless belts on very meaningful guys.
Right.
And then again, you can have an absentee world champion. When you've got Cena all of a sudden is completely cool with being a mid-carder battling for the U.S. title because he's just so personally offended.
Well, yeah, I
by
mean,
Rusev having this belt
because Cena's like the biggest troop supporter of all the WWE.
He's the biggest troop supporter, and all of, you know. I mean, I don't know, but also another fun fact though, Lana is one of those. Florida State Cowgirls.
Oh, really?
Yes, with Jen Sturger.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. She was. That's where she comes from. She was
doing,
like, catalog modeling and stuff because she got found because they kept cutting to the Florida State Cowgirls on camera during the games.
Yeah, they totally made her look. Like, her look is kind of, like, again, like the whole Rocky IV thing.
Right, yeah.
You know,
well,
Brigitte
she grew
Nielsen.
Up in Russia. She grew up in Russia because she did ballet and her family, like her dad was working there for a while. So she knows Russian and all this stuff.
But they totally angled her like that. You know, they gave her like the bleach blonde and the red lipstick. And it was, it's pretty spot on though. It's pretty cool.
But yeah, she's a former Florida State Cowgirl along with, she and Jen Sturger are like BFFs.
Huh. Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. that might interest you. But I think Cena wins this belt because then you have you have Rusev losing his first match.
Right.
He has not yet lost. And by the way, he's only cheated once, and that was against Cena. So, in my opinion, Rusev is the face here because I'm not a John Cena fan. I am not one of those women who find John Cena attractive, nor am I a 10-year-old child. So I'm not a John Cena fan.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
every now and then you see the you know, 30, 40-year-old dudes that are in the audience and they're big Cena guys for some reason.
They're probably like veterans or somebody.
Well,
maybe they're veterans.
I think also like dads who like, you know, like the role model for their kids, you know.
Sure.
You know, because he does.
I'm not talking about the guys with the kids in their arms or next to him or anything like that.
Oh,
these
really
are like groups of dudes and then they're like, oh, rooting for Cena. And it's just like, that makes zero sense. But no, I think the veterans is probably the right idea.
Yeah.
Moving on to the next match, we've got Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins. We got you know, Randy Orton getting curb stomped a couple of times a few months ago, quote unquote, being put out of action by Seth Rollins, who holds, of course, the Money in the Bank briefcase and is the handpicked future of the WWE, according to the Authority. I think something weird's going to happen in this match. I'm not entirely sure how I don't see this match ending cleanly in any possible way.
No, not at all.
I like Seth Rollins. I've been a big fan of his since he was back in Ring of Honor as Tyler Black. Randy Orton, I surprised myself by being happy about him returning, because a lot of times Randy Orton kind of bores me, but at this point, so many of the storylines were getting so tedious that it was nice to
throw
someone else into them. So part of me, I have no problem either way with who wins this match, as long as we get something entertaining and something where this whole Orton and the authority stuff can move forward.
I think it's a guarantee this one's going sideways, and that's really all anybody cares about anyway. It doesn't really matter.
Kind of sideways,
yeah, it
right?
doesn't matter who wins.
Yeah, I like to see some sort of a surprise. You know, somebody enter the ring like unexpectedly. You know, like somebody that nobody really expects will be there. That would be fun. Just because, I mean, for me, this whole angle, like, kind of, there's a comeuppance kind of angle to this. Like, somebody needs to, like, either one. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, but I think Rollins especially probably needs to kind of have somebody kind of keep him in check a little bit. So I don't know. And the authority and the whole thing. I think that there's going to be some element. I don't know who. I don't know what. I mean, but there's always something. There's always a couple of curveballs at WrestleMania that, you know, you're surprised by, and maybe this is that. It just feels like this is the right match to kind of have that happen, I think.
Especially, too, that we could also see some fallout from the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, depending on what happens with Kane and Big Show and Mark Henry, who are all supposed to be on the authority side, but there have been some friction between those three. And, of course, with that Battle Royal being where all these other small storylines are kind of going to get played out, that could have repercussions into, you know, Seth Rollins' authority entourage.
Or they could borrow from another match and have R-Truth start stealing his briefcase instead of the belt.
R-Truth is a kleptomaniac. Man, when you run out of ideas, you just give, like, farting or kleptomaniac out, basically. Natalia.
Yeah.
She had spent a whole year as this woman who farted and was hanging out with Hornswoggle and the Great Khali. How pathetic is that?
I don't know.
She's made it back to the big time, though. Now she's fighting bulls. Mini bulls.
Mini bulls. So moving on to a match that I'm actually surprised happened. I mean, we kind of saw it coming. There have been whispers about it for a while. Bray Wyatt versus The Undertaker. I'm just kind of surprised The Undertaker decided to come back for another match. I thought maybe you round it out nicely with that, you know, the 21-1, and then you say, all right, peace.
Yeah, but I mean, it's probably, I mean, I'm guessing. I mean, obviously, we don't have to guess. I mean, there's a ton of money probably, you know, for him to just come back to do this.
Of course.
You know, why else would you do it? But I don't know. I personally, like, I'm with you. I kind of like, I don't like when wrestlers come back. And of course, he's not going to look the same. He's going to be, you know, like wrestlers removed from wrestling for a while. And, you know, they always look a little emaciated and a little scrawny or a little, you know.
Yeah, and every year his matches get worse.
Yeah, he looked rough last year.
He's older and slower and older.
Yeah.
He looked rough last year.
I don't. Yeah. I just tend to hate that. I mean, I don't like, you know, I don't know. And not to be
his,
an ageist.
His entrances are cooler than ever. You know what I mean?
Right.
But at the same time, once he gets in the ring, then it's just kind of like, oh yeah, this guy's old.
Yeah,
again.
Let's have a sad reminder of how great this guy used to be by seeing what he is in the ring now.
I didn't know the whole background, the whole Bray Wyatt, you know, the Husky Harris thing. I didn't really follow the NXT stuff, so when I did kind of get into that and did you know really kind of piece all that together. I like the Bray Wyatt character. I think it's neat. I think what he did, at least, I mean, I don't know how much, you know, longevity it has or whatever, but at least to the start, I thought it was cool. And I always like when they give like a character something like really like a weird thing that you can really kind of draw it a little bit. And I think the whole like cultish family thing is, you know, it's always something that they kind of go back to over the, like, decades, you know. They always, some form or another, there's always
it's a well you can draw from repeatedly and
sure.
Right.
Sure.
Like, you know what it is? It's the Deliverance angle. You know, if you've seen the movie Deliverance, you know, squeal like a pig and all that.
Right.
That's really what it is. It's the mountain people, you know, but I think he does a really good job. I mean, he kind of transformed himself, and he's a very good wrestler. I mean, he's like really.
Of course. I mean, he's the son of Mike Rotunda and the brother of Bo Dallas. I mean, he's a wrestler.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like really, really good wrestler. I mean, for a guy that size, he moves really, really well.
Yeah, he's very agile.
Very flexible, very athletic.
Yep. Yeah, and so, you know, I like it. I think it's interesting. I mean, I don't really love the fact that The Undertaker is coming back for this, but it just, you know, it'll be interesting. I think they match up well because they're both very big, athletic wrestlers, and they both do things that are like guys their size shouldn't do.
Yeah.
So that element makes it interesting. And I hope it is really, you know, an interesting match, like compelling enough, and that keeps everybody interested. I think
I'd be interested to hear, like, if this ever comes out, whatever the behind the scenes is behind this match getting set up, just because this makes so much more sense for Bray Wyatt than it does for The Undertaker.
I know, yeah.
The Undertaker has nothing to gain here except for obviously some dollars for coming back and doing the match.
Nothing to lose because he's already the streak's already been busted.
The streak's already been busted, but so he's got nothing to lose. But at the same time, like you said, that was a nice way to just round out the whole story, and he could fade off and just be in the Hall of Fame.
Put over the young kid.
But that's the thing, is it's to put over the young kid and to hand off the evil, scary, creepy,
supernatural,
exactly, and
demon.
It just seems like more like they coaxed him into doing this so that way Bray could fight him rather than just, you know, they wanted to bring him back for another match. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Well, the thing that I'm concerned about is how does this advance the Bray Wyatt character?
Because I don't know. Other question.
Because this is the same thing that we've seen, the same pattern of them using Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt picks a target. Bray Wyatt gets all creepy and spiritual and supernatural with that target. Weird things happen in their match. Maybe they fight once, maybe they fight twice, and then it goes nowhere, and then he just goes on to another person, and there's never any development, there's never any true payoff, regardless of who wins and who loses, and then there's not that much for Wyatt to really gain here as a character, because he's fighting The Undertaker, and it's a one-off thing, and it's not like this is the beginning of a protracted feud, or the end of it, or that they're going to even interact again. So I'm curious to see how this can finally move Bray Wyatt's character forward, because he seems to be stuck in the same pattern of challenge, be creepy, fight, you know, and then whatever, right, and then find someone else to challenge and be creepy and fight. And so that's what I'm curious about, to see is how this character can even move forward from this.
Right. And it's about buying into, you know, what he's selling, really. And that's like, you know,
right,
it's interesting that he's, you know, up against The Undertaker, who, again, sold a very almost similar angle. I mean, less verbal angle. But maybe that's kind of, you know, we were talking about this earlier. Maybe that's the reason The Undertaker was so successful, because it was really about how you perceived him, not what he did necessarily,
right,
like on the microphone. It was how you perceived him. Whereas Wyatt is very verbal and, you know, mm-hmm, does all these different things like you were saying. And you know, you can only go so far with that.
Right,
because
it's all very literal. There's nothing open-ended, because
right,
he's explaining every
right
step of his
motivation. The Undertaker was mystique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the darkness, the death, and the whole thing, and the coffin, and the dead man, and, you know, all that was, like, really, you know, 75% mystique.
Sure.
You know, and the 25% was a great wrestler, but it was really about the mystique. You know, when he entered the ring and the music, and, you know, it was amazing, and it still is. And with Wyatt, it's like it is about him and the creepiness and all that and the scariness, but it doesn't go very far from there after that. And it's just kind of like, it is what it is. And it's not about, like, every time you see it, you know, like, it's not iconic. And that's the whole point. Like, can it be iconic? I don't know.
Can it be iconic?
Yeah, whereas The Undertaker, obviously, is kind of like a creepy horror movie, you know, character, like a Jason or, you know, mm-hmm, Michael Myers. That's why he's who he is, and that's why it sells still, because, you know, he kind of built that up to that. Every time you see it, it's scary, and little kids kind of like, ooh, it's The Undertaker, and, you know. But Bray Wyatt's just kind of like, boo, you know, and like, okay, what, now what, you know, and where does it go from there? So yeah, it's interesting. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's good. It's going to be. And I just feel like it's going to be hard for the Bray Wyatt character to really expand from this, just because it's a one off match. You know, if this was a different creepy guy or a younger Undertaker, then this is going to be something that they could build.
Well, that's the thing.
They
have. I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't watch it as avidly as you guys do, but like, I mean, have they developed any really new, compelling people to like challenge somebody like Bray Wyatt?
In terms of being one-on-one and being creepy with each other.
Right.
That's
the whole point. Like, maybe they don't necessarily have to be creepy. Like,
sure.
But can they make somebody that, you know, develop somebody that is the antithesis of what he is, but maybe be equally as disturbed
Finn
and creepy.
Balor.
You know?
Yeah,
like,
Finn Balor. That's really what they have to do with him, I think. And I think that it could probably work. I think that Bray is incredibly talented in the ring, certainly, but definitely with the mic. I mean, he's one of the best guys on the mic in the WWE.
Yeah,
he knows how to speak so people don't want him too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He speaks very well, and it all comes out very naturally for him, and like he's engaging, and so I think that they could make the shtick, if you will, successful if there's some direction to it, and maybe it's this. It's something like what you just mentioned. Well, a combination of that. Like him bringing up guys and they're like his demons, kind of like he did with Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. Maybe it's like Finn Balor or somebody else that's like in the NXT level, but has a similar sort of creepy,
enigmatic.
Spooky, enigmatic sort of aura to him, and then
yeah.
But then like he brings him up and then releases him onto the WWE or something like that. So he's like this master of all these little guys or something like that, you know?
Right.
Oh, like a Kevin Sullivan being like the, you know, the demon
right.
master, dungeon master,
something like yeah. Somehow give some storyline, some shape to what his purpose is, because what they've done is they've established that he's really interesting and that he can paint this picture pretty well, but then they don't really know what they want that picture to be, and they start painting one thing and then they go and paint something else and then they start painting something else,
sure.
and then everybody's just confused about it at this point, so nobody can really attach themselves to him. He's just it's floating out there. His creepiness
it's
floats
nebulous.
It's a nebulous floating creepiness that doesn't sink in with anybody, you know.
Right. Yeah, they need to develop somebody that is, again, like sort of, again, someone like him that maybe becomes like the antithesis of what he is.
Sure.
You know, they develop into some sort of like somebody that's going like intent on taking him, you know, down or back to where he began. You know, that kind of like some like, you know.
Yeah, they could do that with Luke Harper even and say, you
right.
know, like, because he's kind of, he's, they have him painted
they've
as
made
a face
him
or
so,
a, as
they,
a
they made
heel
Luke
at this
Harper
point.
So like, almost like, almost like a mute, really,
yeah.
You know, just like a weirdo that like a minion. And that's always kind of like, it's hard to kind of define somebody like that, but you can take someone like him and finally give him a voice and see what happens with it. But I think that ultimately that there, like you said, there's somebody else that in the background that they could probably bring up that whatever way. I mean, again, you just, throw out any, I mean, because he is, like you said, he's sort of this weird sort of supernatural kind of, you know, person, but it's also, there's also those sort of like devilish undertones and backwoods and all that stuff. So you could develop a character that is like determined to like cast him into hell and that kind of thing. And you can certainly like develop that and make that really compelling. And like do a lot with pyrotechnics and all that and all kinds of weirdness.
Yeah, have a lot of creepy effects and make it real.
Right.
Exactly. I mean,
treat him like he's the new Undertaker and really
yeah,
give him that weight.
They could go that route. And,
right.
and the other thing, I mean,
that would be fun.
Not just NXT, they could do this with like maybe some guys that are in the WWE level, but they haven't had a good go of it as far as catching on or being
character
anything.
Character development or whatever.
Yeah, like a Zack Ryder, somebody that's just like some dude in the back, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, you know, Bray Wyatt comes in, like puts him under a spell and turns him into this like creepy minion dude or whatever. And it's,
yeah.
at least it's like a storyline for a guy that's sitting there
okay,
not
so
working.
Like Raven.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Somebody like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the I guess we'll call it the co-main event because I think that's the way Triple H would want it. Triple H defending the honor of his company against that interloping.
Well, calling a co-main event is what's best for business.
Yes,
so.
That interloping mercenary, the man called Sting. Sting, of course, explained his motivations on Monday Night Raw and said, "You know what? It would be pretty stupid for me to come in here 14 years later and fight for the honor of a company that doesn't exist anymore. So thank you, Sting, for at least making that clear." You know, this is a match that Triple H and Sting have both wanted for a really long time. I think it's really fantastic to see Sting finally in the WWE. I think that's just... you know, something everybody who's followed this guy's career has just been waiting to see if that day would ever come about. I'm totally marking out for all of this.
You are, clearly.
I don't know what Sting's going to look like in the ring, but I'll tell you right now. Sting. It's Sting.
She's excited.
I hate to be the pin to your balloon, Andrea.
No, I know what's about to happen here. But, Triple H is going to carry Sting.
But male pattern baldness Sting with sloping shoulder development Sting. I don't know. I just I can't. I mean, you know, you put on a duster and he just makes me think of, you know, Dennis from It's Always Sunny, and I just kind of, I don't know. I'm not buying it anymore. It's a hard sell. Look, he still plays, you know, the whole thing really well in terms of selling the character, and you know, I love that. Look, when he first came back as sort of the Crow character, you know, in WCW, I thought it was great, you know?
Yeah, avenging and judging the NWO for their sins.
They did it perfectly then. I mean, that's the whole Eric Bischoff, you know, that maybe that might have been his apex, really, when that kind of all happened. but really, now it's just sort of just feels like, you know, I don't know. I have a hard time, like, getting into something that should have been done a long time ago.
Sure.
You know, it never happened. But we know the reason that it didn't happen, you know, because
you mean like Mayweather Pacquiao?
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right.
Sure.
No, you're absolutely right. To me, it's like, you know, Sting knew that Vince McMahon was going to put him through the ringer and with all the other guys that were coming, you know, from when they were bought out and stuff. And
yeah, that was a terrible time to go to WWE if you're a former WCW guy for the most part.
Vince made everybody his personal, like, play toys, you know? Like, he was like the bad little kid who popped the doll's kids off and, you know, shoved them into the toilet and everything. That's what he did with those wrestlers, and he treated them like crap. And everybody came and went, and they only, you know, they played out their contracts and they were gone. And I don't blame Sting for not coming there to do that. I mean, obviously,
I respect him for it, honestly.
Smart for him now to, like, do it this way, on his terms at least. But I don't know. Again, it's like the aging Sting. It's like, ugh. I don't know.
It's a bit hard to get excited for the match.
You know, Andrea, I don't want to, like, burst your bubble, but I just don't. I don't know, man. It's just so way past its sell date. You know what I mean? It's bad yogurt, man. I
totally get it. It's just it's sort of like. Sting is my Hulk Hogan. I grew up with NWA and WCW. I thought WWE was like some cartoon crap comparatively.
Yeah, it was.
And it was. You know, I wasn't into that stuff, but I was into Sting. And it wasn't because Sting had blonde hair and face paint, you know, it was kind of, you know, because he used to tag with Jim Hellwig with the Ultimate Warrior back in AWA. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like he was like a low-rent Ultimate Warrior.
Blade Runners, right?
Blade Runners, yeah. And
I know my history.
But it was also that he was in serious feuds, you know. I mean, he was in the Four Horsemen, then the Four Horsemen turned on him, and then they totally shattered his knee on that cage. Like, they really did shatter his knee on that cage, and, like, Sting was gone for, like, 4 months, which is just unheard of at this point. You tear your ACL in professional wrestling now, and you're back in 2 months, which, I mean, tells you the big difference between NFL and pro wrestling, guys. It's not, y'all out there think it's a joke. Nobody's got any rights. But, you know, it's just Sting had a well-rounded character in a what I viewed to be as a 8, 9, 10-year-old, a grown-up organization in NWA and WCW. And I like seeing him around just because, you know, this WWE people, they get Hulk Hogan all the time and it gets boring. Even Ric Flair at this point, like him trotting out is kind of sad. We haven't seen Sting enough unless you pay attention to TNA, which I didn't. You don't really see Sting that often. You can't get sick of him yet.
Yeah,
you can't feel too sad for him yet.
I see what you're saying, and that makes sense. And if you're gonna of the retreads, he really still had some tread on the tires left. So and that's still a compelling. As long as they don't let this become, you know, the same story. You know, they really do kind of cultivate this a little bit and just don't make this sort of the flash in the pan type thing. Because it can become the same thing that it was in WCW.
Yeah.
Very, very easily if they're not careful. But yeah, I get what you're saying, and I think that's cool. But you know, it also is it just kind of makes me feel like sometimes that, like, when they have those you know, flashback, like, Raw kind of moments, and they bring out like the guys with like horrible knees, and you're like, oh no, why are they doing that to you know, whatever, to the Magnificent Morocco? He looks terrible, you know, like, whatever. It's, you know, I don't know. I just, those type of things are tough sometimes as well. But he's still doing his thing, you know. And if it makes you happy, Andrea, hey, that's all that matters, kid. That's all that matters.
Well, the other thing, too, though, is also that he's going up against Triple H, who can carry this match. Triple H is a phenomenal in-ring performer. Because initially the thought was it was going to be Sting Undertaker. You know, that's what people were talking about a year ago. And that would not be a watchable match.
No, that
you
would be tough.
It would be difficult to watch that.
Yep. Yeah. I hear you. Yeah, no, I think it'll be certainly be an interesting match for sure.
And finally, the main event of the evening.
You called me.
Yeah.
The co-main event, but the
I'm
main
kidding.
Main event.
The second co. I love how they. It's the to me co-main event means there's two co-main events, but like in like the UFC, which coined this co-main event crap, it's like it's the co-main event and then the main event. So it's like, well, that's not co-main event then. It's like the second main event or something.
First runner-up main event.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So the WWE World Heavyweight Champion Brock Lesnar, accompanied to the ring, of course, by his advocate, Paul Heyman, be defending that championship against the hand-picked hero of the WWE by Vince McMahon, the handsome Roman Reigns. Handsome is basically all that Roman Reigns has anymore. Now that the WWE has been jamming him down our throats for months, even people who loved him in the Shield, loved him without the Shield, are sick of him because he doesn't have what it takes, not just yet in the ring, definitely not what it takes on the microphone. He's got the physical traits, absolutely.
Yeah. He's just a little raw.
He's just still a little raw, but that doesn't seem to matter to the powers that be.
No. They pushed him too soon, you know, and that,
sure.
And again, because he was, you know, if you guys ever watched the Brady Bunch when you were kids, he's the Johnny Bravo, you know, he fit the suit basically. and that's what he was. I mean, really, I mean, like you said, good looking guy, big dude, you know, like guy that you can get over, but not, it was, certainly wasn't ready, you know, on the mic is just very, very boring and almost uncomfortable at times. And, you know, I mean, that's how far can you take that? That's why people booed, you know, at some of the pay-per-views, and it's going to continue to happen. And I think that, you know,
well, it's too bad. They're not booing him. They're booing the WWE, you know, and they're
right.
booing Vince for like,
right.
like, come on,
but,
you, everybody knows you guys are directing what goes on here. So you're choosing to give us this guy who, you know, everybody knows he's not there yet. And it's just, it's disappointing. And like, I feel bad for Roman Reigns just being like, caught in the middle of it all. He's just doing his job and what everybody tells him.
You're not going to, and who was it? Was it Paul Heyman? Who was it talking? You're not going to say, hey, I'm not ready. If Vince McMahon says, hey, we want you in the main event at WrestleMania, we want you to be the champion. You're not going to say, hey, it was Steve Austin. You're not going to say, hey, I'm not ready for that because
you don't know if you'll ever get that chance again.
And if you say I'm not ready for it, then they might just say,
they might say, oh, he'll never be ready then. So no,
you can't blame Roman Reigns, the performer, the pro wrestler, for what's going on because it's not actually this isn't him.
It's a shame too because I feel like he's actually made some strides in the last even 3 months or so as far as he is a little bit better on the mic and he is
getting a little more comfortable.
He's got a couple more moves in before it was just the Superman punch and the spear, but like he's got a few other moves he's worked in now and like he's doing a bit more in the ring. He talks a little bit better. He's doing things better, but that's the thing is that's the time that it takes, and that's why he wasn't ready to win the battle royal, the Royal Rumble in January, and that's why everybody booed the night after, because he's not ready and he's making progress, and I feel bad for him that he's making progress, but that he's still like in this situation, you know.
You're not trying to be a manager for. You know, software company. You're a wrestler.
Right.
Or learning on the job is really hard when you're out there trying to entertain a bunch of people. So that's the sad thing. Because like if you make a push, and we've all heard this too with guys like CM Punk and all the guys that are ready to like carry the company, and they don't really get behind them all the time, and that you know, and then they push the package like somebody like Reigns, who kind of fits what Vince McMahon really wants to push. And unfortunately, you know, it's not his fault that he's not ready. But what's he gonna say? No, I'm not gonna take the ball and run with it, even if I don't know what to do.
Of course, you're gonna say yes. You know,
of course,
you have opportunity to headline WrestleMania, win the title potentially. Sure.
Sure. Absolutely.
If Vince McMahon came up to me today and said, "You know what? You're going to wrestle Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, but you're gonna win the title," I would say yes. Sure. Sacrifice me at the hands of Brock Lesnar for that belt.
I would pay to see that, you fighting Brock Lesnar. That'd be awesome.
Oh, I would run away. I would run away. I am the size of Brock Lesnar's arm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Certainly not his leg.
So, well, I don't know. How big is his legs? I'm at least 5'9", but I think his leg probably weighs more than me. I want Brock Lesnar to win this match, especially, you know, he went on ESPN – broke that scoop with Michelle Beadle saying, you know, he's spending the next 3 years in WWE. He's not going back to UFC. So that helps. All signs point to him retaining this title and hopefully doing the crushing Roman Reigns thing in the same way that he did to John Cena. But on the other hand, Reigns is this handpicked guy. You know, Paul Heyman's kind of a wild card here. You never know if Paul Heyman's going to turn on Brock Lesnar. You don't know if Brock Lesnar is going to, you know, lose under weird circumstances, turn face, and Roman Reigns turns full heel, because this would be the crowd to do it in front of. So I feel like there's a lot of outcomes here, so I can understand why Bovada pulled they pulled the spot for Lesnar and Reigns, then they brought it back and it's even money and they're not moving it.
Yeah, it's probably about right, I think.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I mean, obviously if they knew Brock wasn't coming back, they were going to give it to Reigns. Now that he is coming back,
especially when these scripts change on the fly constantly,
I could see any number of like 9 scenarios going on here. One, you know, I don't think that it's going to be the one thing I don't think it's going to be is Brock crushing Reigns, just because. They've spent too much
on this handpicked
time
guy.
And effort over the last 2 years to build Roman Reigns to what he is today, to at the end of all of that, the culmination is for him to face the Super Beast heavyweight champion, and then he's going to get annihilated. You know, I don't see them wanting to go there with his storyline, because that kind of just kills him and any future that he has. But I think that there's a couple different ways they could go. With either guy being coming out as the winner in this, that basically protects both of them and keeps them both looking strong, because you know Lesnar doesn't even need help with that, obviously. But there's, you know, you could have Reigns give it a good show and Brock just beats him, or there could be craziness that goes on at the end, or they could potentially, you know, try to turn one of them in, you know, from heel to face or face to heel or whatever. You know, there's a number of different ways they could go with this. Now, considering that they know that Brock's going to be around a while, and, you know, the fact that they're trying to pump up Reigns, but, you know, I do like the idea of Brock continuing to be what he has for the past year at least or so, which is, I think it's wildly successful what they're doing with him, and the limited appearances, it when he shows up, it really adds extra fire to it. And and if he's the champ and doing that, because that's the thing, is he's not going to show up more often if he loses the belt. It's
right.
going to be the same thing. So if he's got the belt, it makes more sense that he's shown up in limited occasions and things like that. But there's ways to do it that way Roman doesn't look like like he just got, you know, smushed and like nobody, you know, there's nothing to go from, nowhere to go from there. You know what I mean? I mean, they can give him, make it a good fight basically between the two. So at the very least. But that's just my two cents. His mouth tasting freedom while he
does, then calling back. So going from there, gonna talk about people. We want to talk about people who are great on the mic. Want to talk about our favorite people on the microphone, and I think that's a good segue because Brock Lesnar, of course, is represented by the great Paul Heyman, first known to me as Paul E. Dangerously, back in WCW, and the Dangerous Alliance, and his arm wrestling match with Missy Hyatt.
Yes.
Can never forget that classic moment.
Going way back, man. Wow.
I know what's up. Clearly, Paul Heyman, one of the greatest talkers in the business. You know, he's the kind of guy, you know, there's a lot of, especially when you come to managers, when you got Bobby the Brain Heenan, you've got
Jim Cornette. Oh, he's my favorite.
You got some legendary guys acting as in a managerial capacity, for pro wrestlers. But Paul Heyman, out of all of them, he's the salesman. He's selling you a wrestler. He's selling you an experience about that wrestler, more so than the other guys who are just like, I am the mouthpiece for this guy. I'm going to interfere a little bit. But he's always been the salesman of pro wrestlers, which makes so much sense, you know, when you think about his career moving on and him running ECW and things like that and looking at wrestling as a sales pitch. It makes complete sense. And that's what I really like about Paul Heyman, though I, of course, love Bobby Heenan, love Jim Cornette, you know, love those guys.
Yeah, I mean, look, the managers, I mean, like, you just named all the best, really.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think there's any that come to mind beyond that group that are at the top. But, yeah, I mean, look, for me, Jim Cornette is just, look, I go back to the feud with Dusty Rhodes and the two of them, it's like some of the best back and forth, like promos, just incredible. Like, you know, the old Turner television stuff some of my favorite stuff where he just kind of called his mama, you know, a trollop and all this stuff. And, you know, and then Dusty would fire back and say, and call him soft and say, you know, say stuff about his mama and all that.
I've got a rich mama and she supports me and all that stuff.
And his tennis racket and all that stuff. But it was just so great and choreographed, but it was like, it's just the best. So for me, he's right up there. I mean, I don't necessarily have a top 10, but Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair. I mean, for different reasons. Everybody has I look at it as a mixtape, okay? Of different wrestlers on the microphone. Like, I like them for all different reasons. Ric Flair embodied the whole lifestyle thing and, you know, like, you know, he played that whole, you know, ladies' man, you know, rich guy.
He was
Ric
Flair 24/7. You believed that Ric Flair was
always
Ric Flair.
And he was. He owned it. But it was great because, you know, the whole limousine ride and jet flying and the whole thing. And just he totally owned it and he sold it. That's what we talk about, like, character-wise. Mm-hmm. He had that character and that character had, like, legs forever because people believed it, you know. And he totally owned it and he sold it and he was wonderful on the microphone. Now, same thing with Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes gave the people in the audience who looked like him, somebody to cling on to. And, you know, he's just like us, you know, he's the son of a plumber, you know?
Right.
And he was great for different reasons too, because he had the gift of gab and he had that funny affectation when it's all, you know, nothing wrong with the American dream. We talked about on previous podcast about yes. hard times, you
hard
know,
times.
And hard times, hard times. What a hard man, times. What a man worked 30 years at a job. They give him a gold watch. They kick him in the butt and they say a computer took your job, daddy, hard times. That it's like the whole cadence of that is just so, it's like perfection. And like, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts was like the original like scary dude on the microphone yes. with that whole like tone.
So menacing,
you know?
Just with his dark. Voice and his eyes.
Yeah,
just
and
his
that,
voice
that
and his eyes.
Fu Manchu mustache and yeah. like, you know, like the whole persona, you know? He was like, you believed like he had skulls, you know, hanging from his apartment or something. And, you know, he just kind of gave that the whole, but again, it's like, it's kind of a lost start. And that's why guys like CM Punk, when they come around, or The Rock, or, you know, Stone Cold, and anybody that comes along now that like really has that gift, it's, again, that should be cultivated by Vince McMahon and other, you know, wrestling organizations. They should really cultivate the people that can really carry, you know, the weight of the organization on their back. I mean, because those guys are really the what draws you in, you know? I mean, great wrestling is great wrestling, but we talked about Roman Reigns clearly not ready. Looks like he's physically like the guy, but obviously is not comfortable completely. He's not a polished wrestler and obviously not polished on the mic. And that kind of is unfortunate because, like, it shows you that that's where the company is right now. You know, that's where where they're backing, where they're putting their weight behind, and they should be putting their weight behind somebody that does a little bit more to draw people, you know, because the fans of wrestling aren't stupid. I mean, people will tell you that don't understand the whole thing. They'll say, oh, they're all idiots, but they know what the product is, and they know sure. when you're being sold a Fugazi, you know, that doesn't really do anything. It doesn't really get over. You know, when it's a boring match, they'll tell you it's boring. And when, you know, they don't believe in a character, they'll tell you. It's just like anything else. It's like anybody booing at a screen when they're watching a bad movie. It's the same thing.
Right.
So, yeah, it's for me, when I go back to, you know, even like Road Warrior Hawk, who was great, you know, like on the microphone. And they were great. The Road Warriors were a great tag team. But when, you know, Animal talked, I'm like, ugh, shut up, you know. And then as soon right. as Hawk started to speak, you're like, whoa.
Oh, there's something to listen to here.
Yes. You know, like, he had that, like, great, like, he just was great. And he would, like, he used pop culture and, you know, he called Jim Cornette, back when The Breakfast Club was, like, you know, a thing, like the movie. Mm-hmm. He called Jim Cornette a neo-Maxi-Zoom dweeby. And I'm like, what? And he, like, pulled that, like, reference right out of the movie. And I'm like, that's great. And that's like, you know, somebody that gets it. You know, they get the whole thing.
Right.
You know, and I don't know. I just always, like, kind of, like, enjoyed wrestlers like that that kind of got the whole thing, you know. And there was some wrestlers that didn't, like, really weren't great, you know, didn't have great physiques, and they didn't have, but they had that certain thing, you know, they had that certain element that, like, made you want to watch them, you know?
Exactly. Like, that's the thing with Seth Rollins, you know, because Seth Rollins he's a smaller guy, you know, the type of size and physique that Vince McMahon is taking a lot of convincing to even slightly come around to when you talk about him or Daniel Bryan. But, you know, Seth Rollins has been able to ascend to this, you know, major position in the WWE because he's compelling on the microphone. He's got good cadence. He tells mm-hmm. stories, you know, and like you kind of underestimate it, but it's just guys of Seth Rollins's physique in the world of professional wrestling, not just in the WWE, but just in general, all these guys who are struggling, who want to make it someday, guys of his physique are a dime a dozen. But he's also got this extra charisma on top of it that allows him to get to that next level. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, another guy that I think is kind of underrated by a lot of people on the microphone, Rick Rude. You know, Rick yeah. Rude was at a time where, you know, it was about the physique. There was guys with muscles on muscles on muscles. And Rick Rude's body type was not a rare body type for that time in professional wrestling. But what he could do is be compelling on the microphone. You pay attention to what he says. And that takes you to the next level.
Right. And even, look, even the Ultimate Warrior, who was, like, so weird.
Yeah.
Like, his promos were so insane, but they were, like, they were at least interesting, you know, because he bought into what he was selling, you know, and that's the mm-hmm. whole thing. Like, I think,
yes,
you know, when somebody is, like, reading from a prompter, or they're taking what they've been told to say, and they don't sell it in a convincing way.
Right.
He always like, you always knew that he really thought he was the Warrior.
Yes.
And he sold it that way. You know, he talked about the gods above and the warriors. And, you know, like the grunt and the snort and all that stuff. But it was like he totally bought it. And
he totally
sold
bought it, yeah.
And a lot of wrestlers are like that did that. But, you know, again, it's just all about, you know, about how much you devote to it and how much you buy into it. And again, not everybody has that skill, that talent, but it's just a shame that we're not seeing more and more of that. You mentioned Seth Rollins, and that's great that somebody like that at least is getting that push, but we should see more of it, you know? And I think the Attitude Era kind of ushered that back into the fold again, you know, because it was stale before that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it kind of fell off a little bit again. You know, since then, it's
right,
sort of like,
because there's all the focus on the Batistas, and,
yeah,
and you know, and John Cena. I mean, John Cena could command a crowd,
mm-hmm.
but he also, you know, he there's all, you know, there's the weird preacher man voice, and when he thought he was a rapper or whatever,
he
and,
still does that.
He still
vacillates
still
depending on where
those
it depends on where he is. If he's in the South, he's got a little preacher drawl to him. If he's like in like New York or something, I think it's he gets his thug voice out, and then like the rest of the time
he's
just
like
that
smiley. Oh, you love me or you hate me,
he's
but at
support
least you're
the,
making
he's
noise.
Support the troops, John Cena.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
weird. It's
yeah,
it's uncomfortable.
There's just so, you know, again, it's just something that like I wish we saw more of for different wrestlers and stuff. And there's plenty of guys out there that could be that way, but they, you know, they just choose not to. And I think that's part and parcel because Vince McMahon falls into that trap because he had that Hulk Hogan, you know, Wanda. By the way, Hulk Hogan was great on the mic too.
You know, very simplistic message,
body.
But you know,
it's
a man. I mean, Hulkamania was a thing about words, not about deeds, really, in terms of in the ring.
No, it had the crowd, that's for sure.
He sold that whole package, and during that period, you know, even though it was cartoonish at some point, like again, it starts out well intentioned with Vince McMahon, and then it becomes a cartoon, that's unfortunate.
I'll say that one, it's a little tough for me to participate in the conversation about best talkers, just because, you know, probably my current favorite wrestler is Rusev, and he doesn't really say anything except babble in another language. And when I was a kid, my favorite wrestler was George the Animal Steel, and he would just eat turnbuckles and grunt.
Well, yeah,
so,
George the Animal Steel in real life was an English professor.
Exactly.
True.
But
I
didn't need to hear any of that.
Right.
I'm just what I do want to say is that I think it's tougher to be. It's tougher. The mic is tougher today because they force more scripts on guys. And like
that was a 30-page script where it used to be a 1-page outline.
Well, right before it was Mad Libs and just go crazy with it. And like now it's like you got
memorized lines.
It's memorized lines, and some guys just aren't good at that. And
they're professional wrestlers,
right? And you see them like they're sitting there trying to remember what they're supposed to say, and they trip over something, and then like some of them do okay at getting out of it, and some are have problems. You know,
it's really about a season. You know, a season of narratives, and that's what Vince and you know the writers want. They want to extend it and think about 5 weeks down the line, or two months down the line, or a year down the line, and not think about letting the character, like that's why you mentioned earlier Paul Heyman was so great, because what he did in ECW is he let characters
mm-hmm.
be part and parcel. Someone's personality and
yes.
let that grow from their person. Like Stone Cold came from ECW And that right. whole persona came from, you know, that.
From,
I mean,
Vince being like, be who you are. Don't, you don't have to be stunning Steve. You don't have to, right. you know, you can, who's but Steve Austin? Put him out there.
But he became that character because he was able to sort of like.
Well, he's also injured and he couldn't wrestle, so he had to do something compelling. So they're right. like, talk.
Right.
Just talk.
And exactly. But it was like that, the trust that Paul Heyman had in mm-hmm. those guys, all those guys that came from Punk and you know, Raven and all those guys.
The Dudleys.
Dudley. I mean, even like go back to like Shane Douglas. I mean, that great drop
yeah.
that he did. I mean, he was just like, I mean, that's one of the best, like, you know, shoots I've ever seen. He was just kind of ripping. He said, you know, and he, you know, owned it. But he, and you never knew that. He was like that face for so long, Shane Douglas, like that little, you know, apple dumpling face guy, you know, with
blonde. Right. Or he was, or he was Dean Douglas, the professor or whatever, WWE,
yeah,
and like making fun of him for having a master's degree, basically.
Right. Right. You know, and it's weird because when you allow somebody to become, you know, let the personality kind of shine, you know, open up a little bit, it's different. And even if they're a great wrestler and you only just want to push the wrestling aspect, like Scott Steiner, when he was allowed to get on the microphone, he came like, you know, no, and he's crazy. He's completely
crazy. Oh, he's crazy.
But he was like, you know, like the big,
he's the big bad booty
daddy.
Exactly. You know, but he was great. I mean, he was so great.
It's only funny because I thought of him earlier when we were talking about people that weren't good on the mic.
No, I think he became, you know, like, and yeah.
He was like a parody of himself.
It was farcical a little bit, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but at least, I mean, he was able to kind of, and again, he was sort of that like, anti-hero kind of guy and you know, wasn't the face that he was when he was younger and wrestling with his brother. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but he was allowed to kind of do that. And that's the thing. When you allow somebody to sort of become something else, then it usually develops into something a little bit more interesting, a little more compelling. And I think that's the most fun for wrestling, was when you let somebody, you know, do something different and you kind of let them open the door for themselves and stuff. And just instead of trying to keep them in a box, because I've always hated when we've seen wrestlers go through years and years and years of crazy characters like Scott, you know, Kevin Nash, you know,
right.
The years of like the weird, like Oz and all those.
Oh,
weird
oh my gosh. Oz. How long WCW pumped up Oz and then, yeah
no.
just nothing. Just nothing
and,
there.
You know, when you do that, it's like, you know, again, he only got to be himself really when, he got to back to WCW after the his stint as Diesel, you know, mm-hmm. because he was really just sort of the bodyguard, and he really have a personality. He wasn't allowed to have a personality. And then sort of when he got to WCW, he got to be a leader, and he spoke out, and, you know, he was honest about the way people treat wrestlers and all that stuff. And it was cool to see him be that guy, and whether you loved him or you hate him, you know, he was able to sort of
have something compelling
thing.
To say.
And that whole storyline was fantastic. I mean, the whole NWO Outsiders thing was like, was great. And that, like, it finally challenged, you know, the WWE at that time, because they really owned wrestling at that point, and they finally gave them run for their money. And that was really because of that whole storyline of the anti-hero, and that created the, you know, part of the narrative for the Attitude Era and all that stuff. So, I mean, that, to me, that's kind of what helped change wrestling again, because it was really the Hulk Hogan era, you know, that sort of developed, and nobody else really had a shot during that time. It was all just smaller regional stuff. And then, you know, once that kind of phased out, you know, they had to sort of become that era of the anti-hero, where you just you love this guy, but he's not really a nice guy. And
right.
But he's kind of an asshole, but we like him. And, you know, that kind of, you know, that era is really what really changed wrestling and made it a little bit more compelling and interesting, because you never knew when a guy was going to turn on somebody or when something was going to change in the ring. And I think that was always.
Right, or how you interpret the gray area where it's not a heel and it's not a face and it's this weird gray area. So you have to kind of come to your own conclusion of whether or not you're a fan of this guy
right.
for whatever reason, you know.
Exactly.
Well, before we let you go, Johnny.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Are you gonna pay $9.99 for WrestleMania Sunday?
I might. You never know. I mean, I might have $10 worth of pennies lying around somewhere. I might have to get that just to watch it, just so I can report back to you guys if I feel like.
If you have a Roku, it streams pretty well on the Roku. That's for
that's
sure.
Nice. Well, I do have a Roku.
They have a dedicated app for the Roku.
Cool.
And yes, it streams quite well on the Roku. There's also the Hall of Fame induction ceremony on Saturday night. You don't want to miss that.
That's cool. Now, who's getting inducted now?
Let's see. Who else? Alundra Blaze, otherwise known as Medusa. She's getting in.
Nice.
Macho Man.
Oh, the Macho Man.
The Macho Man. Who else is getting in? Kevin Nash is getting in because Scott Hall got in last year. So
the only ones I can remember, the Bushwhackers.
Bushwhackers are in.
Bushwhackers.
There's a couple other guys.
I think there's like 7 or 8, but those are the ones I can remember off the top of my head. But Medusa, Alundra Blaze, she threw away that belt and she's getting in.
I know, right?
And additionally, you can see all of their original programming on the WWE Network.
If you want to watch old clashes of the champions. They have that on there.
It almost feels like we're sponsored by the WWE podcast here.
You guys really need to get on that, man.
We should at least send Vince a link and see if we can get some cash for this, right?
We'll $9.99.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get it 1 month free.
Exactly.
Well, we'll have to have you back in the coming weeks, Johnny. We'll talk a little bit about the draft prospects in the National Football League.
Yeah, our podcast, the Rummy and Ray Fantasy Football Podcast, will be back the second week of April, and we'll be doing our position rankings, basically, for rookies, and we'll be getting into the NFL draft pretty deep. So, yeah, absolutely. I'll be glad to come back and talk with you guys as we get ready to, you know, it'll be, hey, the draft's coming to your town, is it not?
It is. It will be here in Chicago, so that's pretty exciting. And
I'm going to go down there and see if I can get selected.
Exactly.
Hey, you never know.
Line up in the green room put a suit on.
I heard the Browns are looking for people. You never know.
They've got 10 picks.
You never know. They could use a quarterback. You never know. it's going to be fun. I'm glad that it's actually, floating around a little bit. I think that probably the next eventual draft spot will probably be LA because they'll be moving out some new teams and everything else and having some shuffling around in there and probably internationally. Well, I don't know if it'll ever be international, but it might.
Canton,
you never know.
Also, at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton and having like that football stadium next door, you could store some fans in there during the draft. I think that would be cool because I know Canton is dying to host the draft.
That would be interesting. I think that'd be an interesting twist.
I mean, it's inevitable that they're going to move it around to different locales. I mean, that's the whole thing. They want to bring the Pro Bowl to Brazil, which is, you know, crazy because it's like crime ridden right now. Which
Brazilian vacation for the players selected to the Pro Bowl.
Are they waiting to see how the Olympics go? Or
yes, they are. They actually are waiting to see how.
I assume as much.
But it'll be fun. I mean, I think that any time we get to talk and about the NFL on any level is always good. So.
Well, we will definitely have you back. We will talk. We'll get all pre-draft ready with you, and get our fantasy football listeners prepared for their rookie drafts, especially in dynasty leagues.
I have definitive opinions, and some that sort of stray from the norm a little bit. But I did that last year too, guys, and I was a big Odell Beckham Jr. fan, as you guys remember.
Oh yeah,
and when it wasn't very popular, so. Hopefully some of those will hit again, and I'm the Manny Ramirez of fantasy football. I take some mighty big swings. Sometimes I twist myself into the ground and I strike out, but sometimes I go yard and I watch as the I watch my work as the ball kind of ascends and.
So Manny Ramirez, the football player, or the baseball player, not Manny Ramirez, the center for the Denver Broncos.
Yes, yes. That would be very boring. Manny Ramirez, the center, is the Roman Reigns of football players.
Well, before we let you go, let our listeners know where they can find you on the interwebs, Johnny.
There you go. Well, you can first of all, you can follow our podcast, myself and Raymond Summerlin. You can follow Raymond at RM Summerlin, and follow at Rummy Ray Pod for our podcast, and check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you could find us on other Android, you know, apps and so forth. And you can find me, of course, at Rumford Johnny. As always, I'm always dispensing some right around this time of year, a lot of rookie, you know, dynasty talk and that kind of stuff. So I love it, and I'm always willing to kind of let you know what's up and stuff. So.
Excellent.
Well, awesome.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight. Help us preview WrestleMania and talk about some of our favorite wrestling memories. We put in a lot of history into our chat this evening, so I hope a lot of our listeners enjoy that. I know we have a few listeners who definitely know their vintage pro wrestling. They'll appreciate that.
I'm old, so I know a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, we're old, so. All right, Johnny. Well, until we meet again here on this podcast, thanks for joining us tonight. Have a great weekend.
Guys. Yeah, feel free to take a batch of profiteroles with you.
Yes,
I will. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
All right,
see ya.
Night. Thank you, of course, to Rumford Johnny for joining us to talk about WrestleMania 31 here on the special WrestleMania edition of the F-Ball NFL podcast. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter, at Rumford Johnny. He'll be back sometime before the draft, of course, and we'll talk about the fantasy football implications of draft picks, both offensive and defensive players.
Of course. He'll know more about offensive guys.
But until that time, and until next week, we're not going to do football trivia tonight because we've spent so much time on professional wrestling. It just doesn't seem to make sense.
We could
right?
do wrestling trivia, but that just at this point, you know.
I think we brought up all of our little like trivia points and stuff. We talked a lot of we had a lot of obscure professional wrestling references.
Yes.
In our discussion with Johnny.
We covered enough for that.
We covered it. So thanks to everybody for listening this week. Thanks to all the pro wrestling fans who are joining us maybe for the first time. Definitely appreciate it. We'll be back with more NFL coverage next week and every week, but we wanted to do this special edition because WrestleMania is but once a year.
Why not?
I am Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League for BleacherReport.com. You can find my articles on TeamStream. You can search me on the Google. You can also find all of my articles in one convenient location at Facebook.com/AHengstNFL. I also cover fantasy football for Pro Football Focus. That's ProFootballFocus.com. And you can find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And, of course, I'm Brian. I co-host this here podcast. And, of course, can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Again, a big thanks to Rumford Johnny for joining us this week. And, of course, a big thanks to all of you for listening here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. We'll be back next week talking about the National Football League. So don't fret. This is not becoming a full-time wrestling podcast. But, again, just felt appropriate considering it's WrestleMania week. So enjoy WrestleMania should you be watching it. Otherwise, enjoy the rest of the NCAA basketball tournament or your mock drafts or whatever it is you're getting yourself into in the world of sports this weekend. And we'll see you next week here in the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Later.
Peace.